Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Asia podcast. I'm Doug Krisner. You can join Brian Curtis and myself for the stories making news and moving markets in the APAC region. You can subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcast and always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business app.
Joining us now is Katie Kaminsky, Chief Research Strategist and Portfolio Manager at Alpha Simplex Group, to take a closer look at markets. Well, Katie, it might be a lot more comfortable for the bulls if we had more of an escalator-like rise here, but we've seen these rapid rises making some people nervous, drawing comparisons to the question posed by Alan Greenspan in 1996 about irrational exuberance. Keeping in mind that even at that time, that was 96, and we didn't see the bottom fall out until 2000 or so. How are you looking at the rally that we've seen? How are you playing it?
Well, I think the challenge is everyone's looking for what could go wrong. And so far, even what happened last week with the Fed coming out somewhat dovish, there's not anything in sight. The only thing I can think about is maybe inflation could, you know, throw a wrench in things, but still things are looking pretty good. And they continue to, which is surprising.
So for the equity market, I'm wondering whether more gains are kind of predicated on the notion that the market must see rate cuts here in short order. And if that doesn't happen, maybe that's the wave of disappointment that brings the market down a bit. Rafael Bostic, I guess, saying, hey, I'm looking for one cut this year, not three. So is the risk that maybe we don't get as many cuts and maybe they don't come soon enough?
Definitely. And I think if you've got to remember, at the beginning of the year, we were having a lot of people saying seven cuts. And now, if you look at where people are thinking now, it's still somewhat divided between two or three. And I think the market has just been happily hoping that, okay, this is going to happen. On the other hand, the bond market, the signals have been somewhat short. So that's suggesting slightly higher for longer and maybe not as much easing as people might think.
The S&P 500 at the moment is about 13-14% above its 200-day moving average. That's a little on the extraordinary side. There's a number of signals that are like that. Is that enough to sell or just to pause putting in new money or to come up with some sort of hedging scheme?
Well, I think that's a challenge, is that we've been saying that for since even February, I was thinking as well, but it just keeps going. And so I think the challenge is you never know how much farther a rally can extend. And as you start to see that concentration, those high signals, then people are starting to capitulate a little bit. And you see that a little bit this week, people thinking maybe it's not a time to get in. And I think it's going to depend on, you know, really if there's nothing in the way. And so far, if we do see cuts, it looks that way.
How are you feeling about mega cap tech? We were just outlining the story about the regulatory risk right now as Europe is concerned. How are you feeling about the big U.S. mega cap tech names?
Well, this is one that I think is even more of an extreme example. So I know that concentration in those names and just crowding in those positions is something that people are really paying attention to right now, just because you haven't seen momentum indicators and concentration since times like the tech bubble. And that's something that makes everyone nervous, because there are going to be headwinds to those particular names at some point. And I think that people are starting to wonder, you know, is it a time to hedge? Is it time to maybe not move in further in those names?
It's pretty interesting that you have industrials and materials and energy and financials that are actually year to date, or at least over the last month or so, you know, they've advanced more than even tech. And when you look at semiconductors, I think there's this notion that semiconductors are just racing to the upside. But XSD, which is an equal weight ETF on semiconductors, is actually flat year to date, which is pretty extraordinary. So I guess that reinforces the idea that it's NVIDIA and it's TSMC and a few others that have shined. But it also shows you that there may be some opportunities elsewhere that at least look like they could be exploited now.
Yeah, and I think people really latched on some of the key names, but then other, as you've seen sort of a rising tide, there's also been more interesting opportunities outside of those names, given sort of how concentrated many investors are in those particular names. So in effect, even though, as you said, the equal weighted names are flat, you're still seeing stuff outside of some of those already heavily concentrated positions that people are really watching. But, you know, some of those things on the periphery might be catching up with some of the opportunities, given the strength of the equity market.
Katie, I'm very curious to get your take on the macro. Today's data was a little disappointing. New home sales unexpectedly down in February for the first time in 3 months. The manufacturing data from the Dallas Fed was a little soft after some stability in the month of February. How do you see the overall economy right now?
Well, I mean, I think you're seeing it go back and forth because you've seen also inflation data ticking up some at the same time. So it's making things a little bit confusing. I'm sure a lot of investors are taking the data that we're seeing today and saying, well, maybe this could be the sign that we might have worse data ahead. I think it's still very mixed. The economy looks reasonably good, but, you know, there's kind of mixed data on both sides, depending on what you're looking at. And I think that's why it's so hard to tell what's going to happen next, is that a lot of things look pretty good. And then occasionally you get things that make you pause and say, well, is this the thing that's going to start an acceleratory move where we have to start worrying about really how strong valuations are in equity markets already? And we have to worry about inflation and possibly lower growth, which is the worst scenario, I'd say.
I see you have a few notes here on Japanese stocks, so maybe we can talk for just a moment on that. We've had a good run, a very good run. There is some indication from Japanese media that domestic Japanese are finally just now going net long Japanese stocks. And for the past 20 odd years, they were net short. Is that part and parcel in why Japanese stocks can still run?
I mean, that's definitely one reason, but I think the biggest thing that I've been watching this week is really what's happened with the BOJ and the fact that, you know, if you still see policy, even though they announced a massive pivot, the market is still already sort of not that concerned yet that we're going to see a change. So you're still seeing positive signs in equity markets despite that change. And the yen continues to weaken as well, despite some of these changes. So with, you know, still very low rates, it's still been a positive inflow for international investors. Maybe that's just another tailwind that's going to push Japanese equities up even more. They've been one of the bigger movers this year.
Katie, very quickly, about 20 seconds, are you still favoring the U.S. over other markets on the equity side right now?
We're seeing that, yes, especially versus EM and China and Hong Kong. But this is definitely something that you are seeing some catch up in Europe and other places as well. So, you know, it's a little bit of a rotation.
Yep. All right, Katie, thank you for joining us. Katie Kaminsky, Chief Research Strategist, Portfolio Manager at Alpha Simplex Group.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The U.S. and the U.K. have accused China of cyber attacks and stealing voter data. Joining us now is Jamie Tarabay, who is a Bloomberg cybersecurity reporter and one of the reporters on this story. Jamie, thank you for joining us. So these sanctions in particular are leveled against two of the individuals as well as a company in Wuhan in China. Now, these are not individuals that have been apprehended, right? Presumably, there's no recourse for doing so. What is the recourse that the U.S. has to address this?
Well, With a lot of these cases, you know, the U.S. has also, launched charges against Russian hackers as well. It's really more outing these people, displaying the connection that they have with the state security apparatus in China. In particular, the company that was sanctioned by Treasury served as a front company where these men allegedly worked and used the network there to set off their compromises and their hacking campaigns. So a large part of this is cosmetic in a way, but it also really kind of, the Chinese are very sensitive to any allegations of cyber attacks. They've come out and were very, they were very, very unhappy with the actions that the US and the UK and New Zealand and Australia took today. And they said that without valid evidence, the US has jumped to an unwarranted conclusion and made groundless accusations against China. They say it's completely irresponsible and a total distortion of fact. And that, in fact, the US itself is the origin and the biggest perpetrator of cyber attacks. So this is... It's becoming a growing show of force by the U.S. and its allies, but it's also serving a greater wedge and increasing tensions between China and Western countries.
Yeah, we had the British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak warning that basically saying that China is increasingly assertive and this is kind of an epoch defining challenge. What do we know about the level of sophistication in terms of the hacking that's being used these days compared with some of the hacking that we've reported on previously?
What's very interesting about this campaign is something that the Attorney General in the U.S., Merrick Garland, had said, that this was a campaign that had begun 14 years ago. And other than the normal kind of espionage, Chinese hackers had purportedly not only compromised networks, but were what they call living off the land. So they were basically sitting in these systems undetected for years. And they were in areas that were very critical to the UK national security, the US national security, critical infrastructure, and doing it in a way where the theory goes that if there were to be tensions arising in the South China Sea, that the hackers could activate the infiltrations into the networks of US critical infrastructure and energy tech, telecommunications, et cetera, you name it, and keep the country distracted from what's going on in the South China Sea and thwart any attempts by the US and its allies to go and help Taiwan, for example. So what we've seen here, what we've seen with Russia with the SolarWinds hack, is that both of these adversaries have been playing the long game, and it's really taking a whole of house effort to confront it and to really name it. And that's not something that they've been doing a very long time. So that's something that we're actually seeing a lot more of, too.
And it's very interesting that we say that officials of the White House were targeted, members of Congress and agencies, including the Justice Department, as well as all these other issues like dissidents and companies. As far as you know, was there any seeking of ransom or any request for a change in activities, or did they use this in any way?
So that's the difference with this particular campaign, because they don't want to draw attention to themselves. So the whole point is not locking up systems. The Russian hackers, the Russian associated hackers who've been behind a lot of these really prolific ransomware attacks that we've been seeing over the last couple of years, they're in it for the money. The hackers in this campaign and the Russian hackers in the SolarWinds campaign, they're in it for the espionage. They're in it for the sabotage in the long term.
So I know that you primarily focus on kind of cyber security and cyber warfare, but if you had to kind of look at where U.S.-China relationships are now as the result of this discovery, what do we make of it?
You know, it's a challenge. I think the UK has a particularly sensitive relationship with China because of its position regarding Hong Kong. And I know that, you know, obviously it's something that the White House has come up and said a lot in terms of being able to have relationships and the dialogue with Beijing. This isn't going to help. It's certainly going to make them a little less inclined to partake in talks. But it, when China's unhappy with the U.S., the ripple effect of that is felt elsewhere in the world. And it's done in ways where the U.S.
It's got a wide net.
Doesn't help them.
All right, Jamie, thanks for joining us. Jamie Terabe, Bloomberg cybersecurity reporter. China did dispute the claims. A foreign ministry official called the UK accusations disinformation and said a Chinese embassy spokesman in Washington said the U.S. always jumps to conclusions. This is Bloomberg.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Let's get to Singapore now. Stephanie Holtz-Jen is with us. She is the CIO for the APAC at Deutsche Bank International Private Bank from our studios in the Lion City. Stephanie, nice of you to stop by. I hope you're doing well. When you look at the American market, if we can start there, can you justify these lofty valuations?
Yes, I think, you know, we have a good justification to be trading at a premium given there's a lot of drive coming from, you know, the structural trends around artificial intelligence. You know, of course, we are, you know, as we're making new highs and highs, we're getting to a point where, but this has been the case for quite a while now, where actually it would look like that in a correction is overdue. But it's very difficult to see in the very short term what would be the trigger for that.
So I'm looking at the graph of the Qs, and from November it's up 29%. Seems like a lot, but then I'm looking here at the ACWI. Okay, that's the All Country World Index. That's basically all the stocks in the entire world in there, right? And it's up 22%. You know, if you look at the graphs, they look almost the same. So it's an interesting phenomenon. It speaks to, I think, and if you look at industrials and materials, and, you know, this is just a really big global rally in equities. Maybe it's spawned by, you know, the severe losses we saw in 2022, where stocks were down, you know, 25% or 27%, something like that. But it seems like it's more than just irrational exuberance for AI in the United States.
I agree, yes. And I think the rest of the globe is, you know, likewise driven by some of these components. You know, you look at the semiconductor space, for instance, but of course, there are a lot of other, you know, growth markets, especially here in Asia, that also have their very specific own stories to justify a rally.
What are the stories that you're referring to? What do you really see that's appetizing?
Well, I think about a month ago, a little bit more than that, I think I was also here talking about our overweight back into China for select sectors there, especially every sector that is supported by government initiatives like consumer discretionary, green energy, also, you know, technology, etc. Now, you know, we've seen, you know, good rally to start with and then a bit of sideways move. And then I think we had a big litmus test on Friday when we saw the currency weaken and how that informed equity. So I'm getting more cautious on that front, but I think I was referring to opportunities we saw here in Asia. And of course, you know, I have not mentioned Japan. I haven't mentioned India yet, but I thought China may be the more controversial at this moment in time to talk about.
Bloomberg Economics had a report out saying that China's high-tech sector could rival real estate as a lead driver in the economy by 2026. By 2026. I mean, that's pretty interesting. I mean, it's scary when you know what's happening with real estate. But in terms of the weighting in the economy, that tech is there. It speaks to, you know, the growth of those companies. So break down a little bit about your interest and where you find maybe some pockets of particular interest.
Well, then again, maybe that is, given that I get a bit more cautious around the technical opportunity, I just want to make sure the takeaway is that most probably we'll have to, be on the sidelines for a little bit and wait for sentiment to be restored, because the reaction function on the back of a weaker currency was too negative for my taste. You know, it could have been a positive one. Also, in regards to equities, performing better because there would be more competitiveness around some of the export-led sectors, but it wasn't. You know, it's a show of non-confidence at the moment still in regards to allowing more volatility into the market. But the longer-term structural trends we see, of course, are all around greening, green energy, greening the economy, living more sustainably. This is where the government is putting funds in. They are also tackling consumer sentiment. You know, you're hampered down by the property market, and we've seen that there's good support coming in for consumers to be able to go back and buy into consumer discretionary. And then, of course, as I said already, the IT sector and high tech, as you just mentioned, we're seeing a huge, reshaping of the economy to be a leader in that space.
Is it possible that China, in a short period of time, can get where it needs to be, let's say on the semiconductor side, to put all of that aspirational drive when it comes to technology? You need the semis. I mean, that's kind of foundational. We were talking earlier about the FT saying that Beijing has adopted new guidance to limit the use of certain AI microprocessors or U.S.-made microprocessors, not necessarily related to AI per se. But I'm wondering about the restrictions that maybe China is imposing on itself, and at some point it will come back to bite it, but perhaps not. How do you see that?
Well, I think overall, everybody has every country would have these aspirations to be a bit more self-sufficient around the topic, to be able to sustain a growth trajectory that is built on the new technology space. And but we all know that will take time. And, especially I think in China, where you have a bit more of a safeguarding to start with. But I think Europe is not too far off as well in regards to that. It won't be able to lead an imminent, because that was the start of your question, kind of recovery.
I'm a little curious about some areas that we haven't talked about too much. We talk a lot in this program on China and Japan, and also the U.S. markets. What about South Korea? Is there anything happening in South Korea that attracts you at the moment?
Yeah, it's also the semi.
You go ahead quickly in 10 seconds.
Yeah, it's also the semi space driving the story. So this is a very encouraging one for South Korea.
Doug?
All right, Stephanie, thank you so much for making time for us. Stephanie Holtze-Yen, who is with Deutsche Bank International Private Bank.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Asia podcast, bringing you the stories making news and moving markets in the Asia Pacific. Visit the Bloomberg podcast channel on YouTube to get more episodes of this and other shows from Bloomberg. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business app.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.